Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast. We are less than a week away from the start of NBA training camps. Man, the NBA, the offseason seems like it gets shorter and shorter. The NBA is, you know, hell-bent on creating kind of a year-round product, and they're getting closer and closer to it. But a lot of tremendous storylines going into this year. The Western Conference, Golden State at the top of it, the Lakers, where do they fit into the mix? Out east, Boston looks like a strong favorite to win that conference with LeBron out of it. But you got the Raptors there too with Kawhi Leonard and how healthy he is and how he fits in with what Toronto is trying to do. To talk about all of that, let's bring in my friend Tim Bontemps, terrific NBA writer over at the Washington Post. And Tim joins me here on the podcast. What's happening, Tim?
Hey, Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. A lot to, you know, kind of dive into here. But Tim, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the NBA, the big news this week, Lee Jenkins, longtime Sports Illustrated writer, my former colleague over at SI, and I don't think it's overstating it, Tim, to say that Lee is the best NBA writer on the planet. He is leaving the media ranks. Jenkins was named the executive director of research and identity for the LA Clippers in this position, which the Clippers say is the first of its kind for any NBA team. Jenkins will use his extensive reporting background and unique interviewing style to contribute to the franchise's amateur and professional scouting infrastructure, as well as help enhance the Clipper experience. Tim, what do you make of Lee Jenkins leaving us, you know, scribes behind to join an NBA front office?
Well, I mean, I'm thrilled for Lee. You know, he's a great dude, and, you know, it sounds like a really interesting opportunity. Like we were talking about before, I'm curious to see exactly what the job is, because I mean, if Sam Presti listens to this, he'll probably laugh. But that's a Sam Presti title, if I've ever heard one. I can't even remember it. Director of research and initiatives or whatever. You know, the Thunder have a whole roster full of ridiculous titles for employees. But I mean, look, it's a really interesting role there. If you look at the Clippers, you know, one thing that you can point to, you know, people kind of pay attention to Steve Ballmer sitting on the sideline, waving his hands around and yelling during games and kind of going crazy. And they know about Doc Rivers being there. But behind the scenes, over the last couple of years, the Clippers have really invested a ton of money in staff. They're just hiring people left and right for jobs. They have to, I don't have the numbers in front of me. They have to have the biggest front office in the league, or if not the biggest, in the top four or five, you know, when you're up there with San Antonio and some of these other teams that really put a lot of money and time into building out their backroom staff to have as many resources behind them as possible. And, you know, you look over the years at the relationships Lee has built with people like LeBron James and other top stars in the league. He's obviously got a remarkable gift for writing. I think, you know, you said it in your, you know, in your opening. I mean, there's nobody who's a better profile writer in basketball and probably in sports media than Lee. He's only had the cover of Sports Illustrated about a billion times now. So I'm thrilled for him. And like I said, I'm looking forward to saying congrats when I see him, hopefully in a few weeks here in LA, and ask him exactly what the job is going to be. Cause it certainly sounds like nothing that I've heard of a team having before. You know, as the Clippers said in their statement, it'll be interesting to see kind of how he grows into it over time.
Yeah, and we've seen over the last, you know, 10 years, we've seen some media members make the jump into front offices. John Hollinger worked for ESPN. He jumped into the front office with the Memphis Grizzlies. Recently, another SI colleague of mine back in the day, Luke Wynn, went from writing about college basketball for SI to working for the Toronto Raptors in a comparable type of role. You know, Jenkins is not the kind of statistician that, you know, guys like Hollinger are, guys like Luke are. So I'm curious to see how it all kind of works out, what he's going to be working on, what he's going to be writing, what he's going to be providing for them. But I will say this about Lee Jenkins. He is as smart as they come, and if there's an opportunity for him to succeed there, Tim, he's going to succeed there.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, I had kind of the first reaction as you. Like, if you had asked me what writer is going to go work for a team, you know, maybe I'd have said Zach Lowe or one of these other guys, like you said, that's more of a guy that's kind of a, you know, a video analytic type reporter like we've seen some other people in the past. You wouldn't have probably said Lee first, but like you said, there's no question. You don't get to where he's gotten to, and you don't have the writing ability that he has without being a really sharp guy that's got a keen eye for detail and kind of seeing the story behind the story. And, you know, when you look at these NBA teams, I mean, one thing about his bio, and like I said, I still haven't talked to him really about it yet, but when you hear that job description, I mean, one thing that could be curious about that to me is, you know, these NBA teams are constantly trying to find out more about the next guys coming in the league, right? These guys who are getting drafted. You know, it's a huge decision to draft a player, especially if you have a pick that's fairly high in the draft. And, you know, if you have a guy with Lee's background, who, you know, always seems to find a story that no one else has ever heard to tell about somebody, I have to think that's going to help you in a scouting background, whether you're trying to sign a free agent or you're trying to draft a player to kind of find out, okay, like, you know, good or bad, maybe there's something about this guy that nobody knows about that we can use to our advantage, or we can decide, hey, this isn't somebody we want to pursue. And you know, the Clippers, you know, certainly had the Blake Griffin Clipper for life thing, but if you're trying to construct a narrative to sell a guy on playing for your team or wanting to be part of your organization, I could think of few, if any, people better to do that than Lee Jenkins, for sure.
You mentioned something, Zach Lowe. Does this start the clock on Zach Lowe as either an assistant general manager or some type of executive role?
I don't know. I mean, look, I think, you know, I'm pretty sure Zach has had opportunities like that in the past. I'm pretty sure he will in the future. And I mean, look, I think if you look at the way the way media is now, the way kind of our jobs have been elevated by, you know, the amount of information that's out there now, the video information that's out there, the statistical information, all the second spectrum data, all the track, you know, all the different tracking data, all the advanced numbers that we have. You know, you look at guys like Kevin Pelton, you look at Zach, you know, there's a ton of people out there doing really smart stuff. I mean, Kevin Pelton has worked with teams in the past too, right? You mentioned John Hollinger. You know, there, if you look around the NBA, guys like Tommy Shepard, the number two guy with the Wizards, he started in PR, right? I mean, you can get into basketball in a lot of different ways. You mentioned Luke Wynn. I mean, he went from writing about colleges to being a scout with the Raptors. I mean, I think as the NBA has moved forward, you've seen these teams, the smart teams, have gone out and found the smartest people to work for them. Doesn't really matter where they come from or what they're doing, right? The Spurs just went and hired Brent Barry. I know Brent obviously played for a decade in the league, but there's a guy who you could watch him do a game for TNT or watch him on NBA TV breaking down a game, and you could say, hey, look, that guy is really sharp. And he knows what he's doing, and some team would be smart to hire him, and several teams have. So, yeah, whether it's Zach or other people, you know, I think that, you know, teams have really just decided that, hey, we have to get the smartest people and the sharpest people we can and get them all in a room and try to figure this out because, you know, as we both know, this is big business, and, you know, these decisions you make are worth a lot of money, and, you know, it's not – this isn't the same old formula with, you know, you either – you know, you start out as an intern and you just work in the league, or you play for 10, 15 years and then you go start scouting. Like, you know, teams are being creative not only in how they play and how they hire coaches and how they, you know, how they build their teams, but also how they build their backroom staffs. And, you know, Lee's hiring is the latest example of that.
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out in LA. I'll be certainly watching to see how he does and what he contributes to that team. All right, let's talk some basketball here. As I said, about a week to go, a little less than a week to go before the start of training camp, media days, all that good stuff that media members flock to. But once again, Tim, the Golden State Warriors, two-time back-to-back NBA champs, finalists the last 4 years, winners of the championship three of the last 4 years, they entered this season as a prohibitive favorite to win another title. They bring the core of that team back. They add DeMarcus Cousins into the mix. Meanwhile, around them in the Western Conference, their top competitor got a little bit weaker in the Houston Rockets. I'll put it to you this way, Tim. Is there anything you can see outside of a major injury or two that can stop Golden State from winning a third straight championship?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you include the injury thing, maybe not. I mean, look, to me, all last year, I kept saying the same thing about the Warriors, that they didn't have enough depth on the wing in particular, and enough depth really, period. And you look at their team this year, and they have the exact same problem. We're still less than a week now before training camp. They still haven't officially signed Pat McCaw. I assume they're going to at some point, but they haven't yet. I don't think. So that's kind of hanging out there. They just don't really have a lot of depth on the wing. Now, the guys they have are pretty damn good, right? You've got Klay Thompson. You've got Kevin Durant. You've got Andrew Iguodala when he's right. They've got guys that when they're all healthy, they are pretty unbeatable. But you're talking about now, this is the, what, fifth year now for this run? It's the third year with Durant. There is, I think, some level of exhaustion setting in for the franchise. I mean, you talked about at the beginning how short the off seasons get. When you're playing 100 games a year, you know, the life cycle for those teams that are doing that is generally 4 or 5 years because everybody gets pretty worn out after a while. That's what makes LeBron such a freak that he did it 8 years in a row. So, look, I think in particular for Andre Iguodala, his health and his ability to play at a high level, I think is crucial, obviously, along with the four main stars. And, look, I mean, last year, the Warriors never got out of second gear all season, even in Game 6 and Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. I know Iguodala was hurt, but with them losing at halftime and their season on the line, in both of those games, they didn't come out like a house of fire in the second half. I mean, in Game 7 in particular, it took the Rockets literally breaking the rim just by bombing so many threes. I think they missed 27 threes in a row, something like that. You know, it took them being that bad and just completely running out of gas on offense for Golden State to win that game. It's not like Golden State came out and blitzed them and won it. So, I mean, look, if you ask me right now, am I picking Golden State to win the title? Yes. Do I think they win the title? Yes. Do I think they win it not super easy, but fairly easily? Yes. But, you know, could a team in the West rise up maybe and scare them a little bit? Yeah, I could see that. Could a team like Boston or Toronto or maybe even Philly give them a run in the finals? Yeah, I think so. And look, the injury thing is a real thing. You've got a bunch of older players who played a lot of minutes, who have a lot of miles on their tires. And, you know, the last couple of years, if Kevin Durant, you know, has Zaza Pachulia fall half an inch higher, he breaks his leg and the season's over. And if Steph Curry's injury last year happens a few weeks later, maybe things are different. So, look, a lot of the stuff comes down to luck, especially on the injury front. But, you know, I do think the Warriors are the favorites. I do think they'll win again. But we've gotten past the point, I think, where it should just be write it in ink. They're going to be fine. You know, I think last year showed that, you know, this team has some flaws for as good as they are. And, you know, it's going to take them, you know, staying healthy and staying motivated to be able to pull this off again.
Let me drill down a little bit on something you said there, the kind of the exhaustion part of it, and not necessarily the physical exhaustion, but, you know, playing together, you know, any potential, I don't know if I want to call it chemistry issues, but sometimes when you have that many big names on the roster, inevitably it leads to something happening in the locker room. We know David West kind of hinted at a more stressful season this past year after the Warriors won their championship. You've been around this team for a few years now, Tim. Did you notice a difference, you know, in the way the locker room reacted and how they interacted from this past year to the year before?
Nah, I mean, David was having some drinks after winning a title, and I think he knew he was probably going to retire. So I'm not, that always has been a little overblown, I think, that specific comment from him. That being said, look, there hasn't been a team that's won three finals in a row since the Lakers in the early 2000s, right? That includes the Kobe team in the mid 2000s. That includes LeBron's, Heat teams. You know, remember that third Heat season or that final Heat season where that team gets routed in the finals by the Spurs, you know, for a couple close games to start the series. Then they just get blitzed out of the building. And, you know, if you talk to anybody who was in that Heat locker room after game five, like, it was like, we got to get out of here. Right. Like, that was kind of the sense from everybody that just they were exhausted mentally and things needed to change at minimum if it wasn't going to be a huge blow up, but that they needed to get some fresh blood in there. And I think when you look at the Warriors, they're kind of in a similar place. I mean, like I said, last year, this team never got going. Even when the chips were down and they were like on the verge of having this thing blow up in their faces and not win, they still couldn't get it going. I mean, I'll never forget being at that game in Houston, that game seven. It was one of the strangest games I've ever been at. And it was the Warriors were not, I mean, they were celebrating after that game, but it was much more of a sense of relief. Like, man, I can't believe we got away with that one. You know, cause they just knew that they were like stuck in molasses all year. They just could never get going. And I don't know how they're going to go this year. I mean, you know, you've got Klay Thompson that's going to be a free agent after the season. Kevin Durant's going to be a free agent after the season. They've got several other guys that are either coming up on deals or up on them. They've got to work in some young guys. You know, Jordan Bell is going to want minutes. He's going to be a restricted free agent next summer. You know, they've already said they need Jacob Evans, their rookie first-round pick, to play. He didn't look great in summer league. I mean, again, a lot of this stuff is, at the end of the day, on the margins kind of stuff. And if the Warriors are healthy in the playoffs, you know, they lost what, one or two games, I think, in the whole playoffs when they had their healthy complement of players last year. So, I mean, look, they're probably going to be fine because they have the most talent, but just because you have the most talent doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win. And like I said, in my, you know, when you asked me before, when you look at some of the teams in the East, when you look at a Houston or a Utah, I mean, there are some teams that are getting a lot better and, you know, could give them a run, especially if they see their production go down just a tick and there's some more wear and tear on their top guys.
Yeah. I agree with all those points there. I think one of the ways that Golden State will have a easier path back to the finals, at least, is the fact that Houston, to me, took a pretty big step back. I mean, their team is weaker going into this season. They, you know, lose some key defenders and Trevor Ariza, Luke Mbamute, their defensive coordinator, Jeff Bezdilik, he retired just this week. They bring in Carmelo Anthony. They bring in James Ennis, who I think is going to play a big role for them this year. But in your mind, Tim, how big a step back did the Houston Rockets take from the team that pushed Golden State that far this past season?
I mean, look, I think their window probably closed. And that's, you know, I remember, like I said, that game seven was so surreal in Houston, because you saw the Warriors, this team that was supposed to cruise to a title, like on the brink of melting down in this game seven and just not really getting it in gear and losing. And you could see the Rockets like had it in their hands, right? They're like holding on to the trophy and it just slipped away. And, you know, after the game, you saw some people and, you know, kind of gave your condolences and they said, oh, we'll be back. We'll be all right. But I mean, look, you look at the way Houston has approached this summer, and it seems pretty clear to me that Thelma Fertitta was not willing to pay significant luxury tax dollars, right? Before the summer started, I would have guessed Clint Capella would have gotten at least $5 million a year more than what he got. He was really hurt by the soft market this summer and the lack of cap space around the league. So even though they signed him to a very, very, very team-friendly deal, you know, less than $20 million a season for a guy who I think is a max-level player, they didn't keep Ariza. They didn't keep Mbamute. They just traded De'Anthony Melton, a rookie who I think actually could have really helped them at some point this season, with Ryan Anderson to save about $3 million this year to get two players who, in Marquise Chris and Brandon Knight, who are not good and I do not think will help them at all. So you go through the moves they made this summer. Then you bring in Carmelo Anthony, a guy who, you know, look, I think Melo got a little too much grief last year for what happened at Oklahoma City. He showed up the day before camp started, was asked to play a way he's never played before. I think he largely took it in stride. You know, there were moments of frustration, but, you know, Carmelo is a really good guy, and he didn't really complain. He did his job. If you ask Thunder people privately, they'll say the same thing. But that didn't really work there. Maybe he'll be better off in Houston, knowing what his role is going to be, being able to prepare for a whole summer, having guys in Chris Paul and James Harden who are way better passers, but I'm not sure if that's going to work out great for him. Chris Paul is a guy who last year, I think he played, 51 games. He obviously blew his hamstring out in the playoffs. He's 33. He's a smaller guard. He could fall off a cliff. You know, look, they have a lot of potential issues. Is their peak still really high? Yes. Is it probably the second best team in the league? Yeah, probably. Do I think they're going to get Trevor Ariza in a buyout sometime later in the year, assuming Ariza doesn't get traded somewhere? Yeah, I do. I think he'll probably wind up back there somehow. And that'll help them. But to your point, this is a team that had everything come together last year and was all lined up for them to really give Golden State a run. And Golden State was kind of flailing, and it all was set up for the Rockets to win. And just didn't quite happen. And I think we might look back a few years from now and say that was Houston's chance, and they really had everything line up for them. And, you know, for one reason or another, it just didn't work out. It might be similar. I just kind of thought of this, but we might look back at that Rockets team like we look back at that Blazers team that was up, 17 in the fourth quarter in game 7 of the West Finals against the Lakers, I think in 2000. You know, it might be like that, where this great team comes together, looks like they're going to win, and it just slips away, and they don't really get back again. I mean, I think we might look back at this and have the same thought.
Yeah, to make a Mike D'Antoni kind of connection there, I almost thought you might look at them as the 07 Suns, which, you know, were in position knock off San Antonio, and we know what happened with Steve Nash getting hip-checked by Robert Horry. Amari Stoudemire comes off the bench. Suspensions ensue. They lose that series, and the Spurs go on a couple of series later to sweep Cleveland in the finals. I mean, it would just be kind of just tough for Mike D'Antoni to have the same type of thing. But you mentioned Trevor Ariza, and I think that's the biggest loss for them. I think everything else they could have survived, Bobby Mute, Bezdelic retired, all the little things there. Yeah, I know Trevor Ariza, you know, isn't the perfect player, but he's versatile still. He can shoot the three. He's a great locker room guy. I mean, I would have been okay with them adding Carmelo Anthony, Ennis, and all the things they did this offseason if they still had Trevor Ariza. And I think if the fact that Trevor Ariza got a one-year deal, I know it was big money, but a one-year deal from the Phoenix Suns, I wonder if down the line the Rockets don't wind up regretting finding a way to keep him and paying whatever luxury tax was necessary to keep Trevor Ariza.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, look, it was going to cost them $250 million in salary and payroll taxes to re-sign Ariza. Would have been the most expensive team in NBA history. I could kind of understand why they didn't do that. And like I said, I do think if he isn't traded to a contender by the deadline, I think he'll be bought out. And my guess is he'll end up back in Houston. All that being said, the bigger sign of where they were headed to me was the combination of the Ryan Anderson trade and not re-signing Bob Mute. I mean, look, Bob Mute, maybe his shoulder is just messed up and he was not the same player after dislocating his shoulder twice last season. Maybe they just were afraid he was going to do that again. But the Rockets had the ability to match the offer he got from the Clippers. One-year deal for less than the full taxpayer mid-level exception. They didn't match it, right? So, and they didn't use their tax MLE on anybody. And then they turned around and trade D'Anthony Melton, who destroyed in summer league, is a guy that was seen as a potential first round pick, somehow fell to 44 after a weird year for him last year, getting tied up in the FBI stuff and barely playing for USC, but a really athletic, physical wing player, a guy who looked like he could be, you know, maybe have an impact like Jordan Bell did for the Warriors last year and play 10, 12, 15 minutes a game in a conference finals. You know, working with a coach and Mike D'Antoni, who's had a long history of helping guys become better shooters. And you use him as the piece to get rid of Ryan Anderson. And like I said, you essentially save $3 million this year. That's not a move to me that's made by a team that's fully intent on putting their best team on the floor this season. I mean, yeah, I know Ryan Anderson isn't really a guy who can play against the Warriors, but Marquese Chriss can't play against the Warriors either. And Brandon Knight isn't going to be able to guard anybody in that series either. So I'm with you. I think the Rockets have taken a step back. They, you know, Daryl Morey is as creative a GM as there is in the league. I'm sure he's going to spend every day trying to find ways to improve their roster between now and March. This isn't the team I'm sure the Rockets are going to end the season with, but it was already going to be a hard task to beat Golden State as it was. And if you don't take steps forward in that quest, you're probably taking significant steps back. And I think that's where the Rockets are now. And look, if you told me right now that the Rockets finished third in the West or fourth in the West, wouldn't surprise me. You know, I think I could easily see Utah being better than them and maybe another team or two too. Like, there are real issues there. And, you know, like I said before, we could look back at this and say, hey, they had their shot. They couldn't quite get there, and now they have to adjust. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to watch what Daryl does between now and March, because you have to think that Daryl is sitting there going, hey, I know I got work to do. And if there is anybody that's going to be able to find the pieces necessary to lift this team up another level or two before the playoff starts, it's Daryl Morey in that front office in Houston.
Yeah, then maybe it's defensive pieces that they're going to need to be looking for, because as creative and explosive as they can be offensively, it was defense that got them into the conference finals in a position to be up 3-2 against Golden State. So we'll see what they
did. Well, and it was defense, too, that had them winning those games in Game 6 and Game 7. I mean, you know, it was, you know, they just couldn't hit a shot in the second half of Game 7. I mean, their defense against the Warriors was fantastic. So, I mean, they, you know, and that, like you said, they've really taken some real hits there, and it'll be interesting to see if they can fix that.
Yeah, it really will. All right, let's from one contender to a maybe contender, the team with a little more questions, the LA Lakers. The LeBron James era officially begins next week. We know what James has done in LA up until this point. He's made some deals with HBO, with Showtime, documentary on Ali is supposed to be coming out at some point, taking meetings with Hollywood studio heads and all that good stuff. Now we get to the basketball part of it. And Tim, you can count me as one of the more skeptical people about the Lakers and their chances to make the playoffs this season. We know it's going to take 47, 48 wins again to make the postseason in LA. That's a lot. Even though the Lakers were in the high 30s in wins this past year, they replaced a whole bunch of guys on that roster. It's an interesting group of players. Do you think what do you make of the Lakers this year on the court? What kind of team are they, and where do you think they finish in the Western Conference standings at the end of the season?
Well, I mean, I'm on record as saying they're going to miss the playoffs, so I'm at least, if not more, skeptical than you are. So I think they're going to be ninth or worst. That'd be a little strong. Sacramento still in the West, but look, when I've said that to people this summer, they've basically looked at me like I have six heads, and then they go, well, they have LeBron on the team. How are they going to miss the playoffs? And my response is, look at the rest of their roster. And I think the Lakers, you know, obviously the Lakers signing LeBron is a home run, right? Who wouldn't want LeBron James on their team? However, you can make a pretty good argument that they did as little as possible with every single other move they made this summer outside of signing LeBron. I didn't really like the Mo Wagner pick in the draft that much. I thought they could have got a guy like Melton or one of these other athletic players. It's a better fit in the modern game. July 1st, they signed JaVale McGee. JaVale appears to be their starting center. They don't really have another option unless Sabika Zubac takes a huge step forward. JaVale was playing with four Hall of Famers at Golden State, so his image was rehabbed a bit the past couple of years. He's played on, I think, eight or nine teams now. He's bounced all over the league. There's a reason for that. I don't anticipate him being very good for them. They signed Rajon Rondo, who you obviously are very familiar with all of your Boston ties. Rondo is not the same player he used to be. He could still help a team. I could even see him being useful there, but he is not going to play defense, and he's going to show up intermittently. And, by the way, you have Lonzo Ball on your team, who you would think the Lakers want to really be utilizing and featuring, and now you're going to have the two of them kind of competing for minutes and time, which could be good, could also be very bad, especially if Rondo gets a little frustrated if he's not playing as much as he'd like. There's also the fact that Rondo is not a good shooter and doesn't seem to be a very good fit playing next to LeBron. Then you sign Lance Stephenson for $4.5 million, which also doesn't really make a lot of sense. Again, that's another move LeBron seems to be in favor of. You know, he's another guy that needs the ball in his hands and can't really shoot. Again, not a great fit with LeBron. Also, I don't think you you probably didn't have to pay him $4.5 million. Probably could have saved some of that money for somebody else. You signed Michael Beasley for $3.5 million, another guy who isn't a great outside shooter, who also needs the ball in his hands, who also doesn't seem like a great fit with LeBron, also has the same skill set as half their roster with Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, and LeBron, and all these other guys that are kind of shoot first players. Well, LeBron isn't. You know, a lot of these guys that are scorers but not really distributors. They have no bigs. I'm curious to see how these young players develop. It is not easy playing with LeBron. I don't really know how that's going to go. And finally, the other thing that I don't think people have talked about enough is this is the first time in probably 12 or 13 years that LeBron James will wake up the first day of training camp and go, I don't have a chance to win a title this year, and know it. Look, this is one of the smartest players we've ever seen. He's not going to delude himself into thinking this team has a chance to win a title. He knows better. And you walk into camp with that level being like, with the top level being, hey, maybe we can get to the conference finals, or maybe I get us to the second round of the playoffs. Maybe I get us in the playoffs. That's a much different goal than I'm getting back to the finals for a ninth straight time. I'm trying to win a championship. And if the Lakers are 20-25 on January 1st, how's LeBron going to react to that? Is he going to be like, hey, you know what? Things are different this year. I got to buckle down and try to get us in the playoffs and do it that way. Or is he going to go, well, this is stupid. What am I killing myself here for? This team is a mess. Look, LeBron is incredible. The Lakers are probably going to be okay, a pretty good team. They're probably going to win somewhere in the mid-40s because of him. Maybe that'll be enough to squeak them in the playoffs. I think they're going to finish 9th or 10th in the West. But, I mean, these people that just act like the Lakers are going to be, have home court advantage in the Western Conference because they have LeBron James on their team. I just don't think they're either A, looking at the rest of the West, or B, looking at that Laker roster, which really doesn't make any sense in any cohesive basketball sense, and does not fit with any of the teams LeBron has had success with over the past 8 or 9 years.
Yeah, I agree with you, first of all. I don't think they make the playoffs. I've been saying that really ever since the offseason wound down and what they put on that team. I've used the word combustible before to describe this Laker group. I still believe that to be the case. I mean, you've got Rondo and Lonzo, as you mentioned. Rondo, the biggest reason Rondo is not back in New Orleans right now is because the Pelicans decided they just couldn't count on him for the regular season. I mean, he's great in the playoffs, but in the regular season, right, you know, he is kind of intermittent.
He almost would have been a better fit on these LeBron teams that were like guaranteed to be contending for a finals appearance, right? As opposed to one that's going to need somebody to play 75 hard games in the regular season.
Absolutely. And look, his how it works with him and Lonzo will be interesting. LeVar still lurks out there. He's been quiet for the last few months, but we don't know what's going to happen if Lonzo's not playing the same type of minutes per game, if he's not playing in the fourth quarter of games. Look, LeBron James went into this situation with his eyes wide open. I mean, he knows that, you know, this is all about, for basketball reasons, this is about the summer of 2019 and his ability to lure a free agent to come down there, and or maybe two free agents, to figure out a way to win championships then. I think there are just too many people out there, Tim, that are giving this Laker team too much credit, that are saying like, well, Lance Stephens is going to be great with this group. JaVale McGee is a great pickup. I look around, and San Antonio, I think, has the potential to be a little bit better than what they were last year, largely because Kawhi Leonard didn't play and they add DeMar DeRozan to the mix. I think Denver is going to be a little bit better. I mentioned the top. You're going to have to get to 48, 49 wins to make the playoffs, and I don't see how this Laker team, which is going to have trouble early on, let's be clear about that. This is a team that's going to take some time to come together. If they do at all, they're going to be probably at best around 500 at the Christmas around Christmas time. And then, do they have the horses to rally and put together enough wins to get to that 48 win threshold? I'm sorry, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Lakers were tied for 12th in defense last year. Are they going to be better on defense this year after adding Rondo and JaVale and LeBron, who, look, LeBron can be a terrific defensive player. He also has not been giving, understandably, given his workload at the other end, the same defensive effort for years now at the other end. Are they going to finish 12th in defense again? I don't think so. No, and the other thing I didn't even mention before is that this team has no bigs at all. So you've already seen LeBron like giving some, I think, kind of passive aggressive comments about, oh, look, I guess I got to play more inside this year, and having like, you know, helium pumped up arms on Instagram, which people thought was like him joking around. But I don't really think it was him joking around. I mean, LeBron has never liked to play up in his career. And I don't see that starting to happen on a five, you know, a mid 40 win team at 33. Right. So I don't know. Look, they're not going to be awful. They're going to be in the mix. But like you said, there's a lot going on with this team, and it just doesn't make any sense from an on-court basketball standpoint, other than, oh, LeBron's on the team, he'll figure it out. Which, look, maybe he will, but I think last year's Cavs team had more talent than this Laker team by a decent amount. I mean, Kevin Love, for example, is far better than anybody on the Lakers right now. And that team, with LeBron playing 82 games, which he's never done in his career, and I think it's probably safe to assume he's not going to do again this year, won 50 games in the East. So do we think that this Laker team, which is worse, which has cohesion issues and undoubtedly will take time to come together as any new team does, is playing in LA where the expectations are going to be insanely high? Are we to assume that this team is going to win that many games in a brutally tough Western Conference where 13 teams could make an argument for being 500 or better? I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. And, you know, we didn't even talk about Luke Walton and how does he work with LeBron as a guy that is a new coach coaching LeBron in terms of coaching LeBron James. And again, is also, as I've said in previous podcasts, and everybody knows, is also a guy that was not hired by the current front office. But all right, I want to move on to the Eastern Conference here. And the two teams I want to focus on are the two teams I think will be at the top. And let's start with Toronto and the changes they made this offseason. Obviously, bringing in Kawhi Leonard, who a year ago was one of the top three players in basketball, arguably the best two-way player in all of basketball. Masai Ujiri this week had some comments about Kawhi. He was asked about him. He said, Kawhi is happy. From what everybody has told me, Kawhi is healthy. He spends a lot of time with our coaches. He went to LA to meet our guys out there. And he said, I think there is a fire inside of Kawhi, and we're all excited about that. So all saying the right things about Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, from a purely basketball perspective, Tim, how does Kawhi Leonard fit in with this Raptors group and the way they play?
Well, he fits great if he's healthy. And I mean, that's really, to me, what the entire thing comes down to. I mean, I don't really, you know, everything I've heard is that, you know, he's probably not going to be coming in 100% full bore when training camp starts. So maybe that'll end up being different. But, you know, we've barely seen the guy play in a year. And I don't know what kind of physical shape he's going to be in terms of being able to play 80 games. I mean, you see him in these pictures playing and working out. He obviously is in great shape, but in terms of just physically being able to stay on the court, I don't think anybody really knows where he is. And, you know, that really to me is going to determine how this season goes, you know, maybe for, you know, not really just for Toronto, but for the whole Eastern Conference, because if Kawhi Leonard is 100%, you know, I think you could look at Toronto as being at least as good potentially as Boston. And maybe the best team in the East. Like, he is that good of a player, and they have that interesting of a roster around him. I mean, the fact that you could throw out some pretty crazy lineups with, you know, guys like him and OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam and, you know, Kyle Lowry. You've got, you know, Serge Ibaka and Jonas Valanciunas. I mean, they can play virtually any way they want, any style they want, any tempo they want. You know, they could grind it out with a couple bigs. They could play super small and fast with Siakam at center. You know, they have the ability to do a lot of different things. But you mentioned Masai before. I think the most interesting thing about Toronto this year is that, you know, you look at Masai Ujiri, and this entire thing is really a bet on Masai, by Masai. And what I mean by that is look, they were ready to blow up that team for a while. You know, Dwayne Casey, as you know, had been like there have been rumblings about him potentially getting fired seemingly every year for the past 4 or 5 years. You know, there have been trade rumors about DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry at different times. And clearly, Masai said, look, this is worth taking a swing on. And I get 1 year to try to convince Kawhi Leonard to stay in Toronto long term if he's healthy. And, you know, that was a chance he decided to take, that he could sell him on that. He also fires Dwayne Casey before that and brings in Nick Nurse, a guy who's never been an NBA head coach before. So you look at this team where in a huge media market in Toronto where, you know, people, Americans might not know as much about this, but you know, Toronto's one of the biggest markets in North America. And on top of that, they have a ton of media there that's pretty aggressive. I mean, it's not much different than New York or L.A. So you're playing in a big media market where, you know, DeMar DeRozan and Dwayne Casey would sit up there and answer every question and take every query for the past, you know, 5, 6 years now. And now those guys are gone. And you have a first-time head coach, and you have Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard as the leaders of your team, two guys that are not, you know, while Kyle could be a terrific, you know, out front person, has never really shown an interest in doing it. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard has never really shown an interest in ever being vocal about anything. So, you know, Masai is going to have to step into that void, I think, much more than a typical general manager is as well. So, you know, it's going to be a really, really interesting year there to see how that all shakes out. I think it was a really smart gamble for them to take, basically, you know, cutting 1 year of DeMar DeRozan's time in Toronto off to have a shot at really raising your ceiling and getting one of the 5 best players in the world if he's healthy on your team in his prime. But, you know, there is also the potential for it to go pretty sideways if Kawhi isn't healthy, or if, you know, there are some chemistry issues, or they take a while to figure things out. So, you know, that's clearly going to be one of the most interesting situations in the whole league. And, you know, how Kawhi handles it and how he looks and how that team comes together, it could be really one of the defining questions of this entire season.
Yeah, on paper, the Raptors are a better team. They're a 59-win team last year, and if Kawhi is back the way that the Raptors are insinuating that he's back, they're going to be better. I mean, Kawhi is an upgrade over DeMar DeRozan. There's no two ways about it. Throw into the fact that they've got a lot of guys, young guys on that bench, guys like you mentioned, Siakam, Anunoby, Fred VanVleet. I mean, these are guys that are organically going to get better, and that bench was one of their biggest strengths last season. I mean, I went to, you know, all the games they played against Boston, and when the Raptors succeeded in the two games they played in Toronto, where they beat the Celtics by an average of 19 points per game, it was because that bench kicked the crap out of the Celtics. Now, I know that'll be, you know, probably a different situation because Boston's bench got a lot better by, you know, just the simple re-additions of Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, but, you know, that Raptor team has a lot of potential to improve. That being said, you mentioned Nick Nurse, and to me, Nick Nurse is the biggest wild card. Now, I know Nick Nurse is well-respected. I did a piece last year where I asked a whole bunch of executives who they thought the next great head coach to ascend from the assistant ranks would be, and Nick Nurse won going away. He's been a coach in the G League. He's been a coach overseas. He's paid his dues in the college ranks, but sometimes that doesn't matter when it comes to being an NBA head coach. His ability to seize control of that locker room, to incorporate Kawhi Leonard, I think that's the biggest. I think that's a bigger question mark, Tim, than Kawhi Leonard's health. I actually think Kawhi is going to be healthy. I think he's going to have a productive year. I don't know what to expect from Nick Nurse and how he coaches that team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I think you could certainly make the argument that it's more of an unknown what Nick is going to do than what Kawhi is going to do. I mean, with Kawhi, it's very simple, right? Is Kawhi healthy or not? The answer is yes, that goes away, right? Because we all already know what kind of player Kawhi is. We don't really know what kind of coach Nick Nurse is at this point. I mean, we have an idea from his background. Like you said, he's a really well-respected guy around the league that has a lot of fans that, could very well do a great job there. But it's a big risk and a big ask to have a guy who's never coached before and plop him into this situation where you've got two rather interesting personalities leading your franchise. And you're kind of in this 1 year experiment where we got to be good right now to try to convince one of the 5 best players in the world to stay on our team. I mean, it's going to be, that's a big ask for him to walk into. And look, I don't think I'm going to guess that Masai didn't expect to make this trade when he got rid of Dwayne Casey, given it was 2 months later, and if he had Noah, maybe he does consider keeping Dwayne Casey as kind of a veteran hand to kind of steer the ship here with what's going to be an interesting setup. But, you know, like you said, there is no doubt that Nick is one of the more well-respected assistants in the league, or has been over the past few years. He did a great job with Rio Grande Valley and the G League. You know, he gets brought to Toronto by Masai. There was always the thought that whenever Dwayne did end up getting let go, that, you know, he did probably want to put Nick in that spot. And yeah, hey, you know, Brad Stevens walked in from college and was immediately good. Steve Kerr walked in off the sideline, out of the broadcast booth and was immediately good. You know, there is precedent for guys being able to just step in and do the job really well. And, you know, maybe that will be what happens here, and he'll immediately, you know, have them turned around and playing great.
All right, let me finish with the Celtics, who are, you know, being around Boston, Tim, there is a lot of excitement both internally and of course in the area about what the Celtics could be this year and what they could potentially be for the next few years. Gordon Hayward, he had a media availability last week, said he's 100% healthy, as you might expect, said he's getting his timing back, his conditioning back, said he's only played 5-on-5 4 or 5 times, so it's still a work in progress there, but him being 100% healthy, of course, is great news for Boston. There was a video of Kyrie Irving playing in Miami. I talked to someone down there who watched the workout, who said that Kyrie looked, quote, fucking amazing down there. So that's good news for the Celtics. Those two guys come back. You know, Terry Rozier, who was a breakout star in the second half of last season, goes to the bench. Somebody out of the Hayward, Jaylen Brown, I guess we even throw Jason Tatum into the mix, but one of those guys will go to the bench, enhancing that bench even more. What do you make of this Celtics team, Tim, which can, you know, really throw two lines of NBA, high-level NBA quality players at you on every single night?
I mean, look, I think, you know, stating the obvious, they have a ton of talent, right? And stating the also obvious, they have a lot of questions. I mean, you know, the first is the injury question. I mean, I think it's a real thing to wonder if Gordon Hayward is going to be the same player he was before. I certainly hope so. And there's not a lot of reason to think he won't be, but, you know, that was a pretty devastating injury, and it wouldn't be the first time that a guy had an injury like that and didn't come back quite the same player. So I think that's something to monitor. Kyrie Irving had 2 knee surgeries in the space of about 3 weeks last year, right? I mean, he's a guy who has played, he's missed at least 15 games in, I think, 4 of his 7 seasons in the NBA. So is he going to be able to stay healthy all season for them and remain effective? I don't know. You mentioned the minutes crunch. Like, this would not be the first time a team had too many guys and there were some chemistry problems because of that, right? You know, is a guy like Marcus Morris going to handle playing significantly less minutes well? Is a guy like, whether it's Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or Gordon Hayward, are they going to handle coming off the bench if they have to at some point? Is Terry Rozier going to handle going back to being a 50-minute a game guy after, you know, being Scary Terry and being the man, and now he's the Puma guy? Like, is he going to handle just kind of being a role player? You know, is Marcus Smart going to be fine playing less minutes? Like, these are good problems to have, don't get me wrong, but they are problems. And, you know, I'm curious to see how they handle it, because, you know, if everything goes right, the Celtics have the chance to be, you know, arguably the most talented team in the league, and they got a real shot to win the title. But if you told me that at the end of the season, Kyrie played 50 games and there was some infighting about minutes and roles, and they lose in the second round to a Toronto or a Philly, if they slump a little bit in the regular season, I mean, yeah, it wouldn't shock me either. I don't think it's a fait accompli that they're just going to roll to the finals with the best team in the East by a long shot. You know, they may end up being the best team in the East, but there are some real questions they got to answer. And, you know, I'm very curious to see how they do so.
Yeah. Marcus Morris is interesting because he's in a contract year, and the return of these players, I think, could significantly affect his minutes. Overall, Tim, I do think, because Boston's been so good at spreading these minutes out, and I think you will see guys like Hayward not play in back-to-backs in situations. Kyrie Irving won't play in back-to-backs in situations. They're going to do...
Certainly shouldn't, right? I mean, they have the ability to rest. I mean, they should be resting guys pretty liberally given the amount of talent they have. That would only make sense.
Absolutely. And I think that will go a long way towards, you know, dealing with any potential issues over minutes. What I do think has the potential to be troubling early on, I had this conversation with Brad Stevens for the podcast last month, is that, you know, somebody that's a really good player who has been a starter for at least portions of their career, high-level guys, all-star players or all-star caliber players, is going to come off the bench. And that's going to be a difficult conversation. I mean, I asked Gordon Hayward about this at his availability last week. And, you know, he said the right things. I'll do whatever if it means coming off the bench. And maybe early on, he is the guy that comes off the bench. You try to ease him back into that role. But does Jaylen Brown...
I'll just say right now, I'll be pretty stunned if Gordon Hayward's coming off the bench.
I would agree. I mean, maybe early, especially if he is as, you know, early on into his 5-on-5 stuff, as he says, maybe he's not ready to play a starter's role early on. But ultimately, Tim, I agree with you ultimately down the line. And I think that's going to mean that Jaylen Brown is the guy that comes off the bench there. And Jaylen Brown, you know, he's trying to make a name for himself as well. How does he take being a sixth man? Can the Celtics sell him on being like the sixth man of the year and getting his accolades on that way? Because you've got to start Aaron Baines for a lot of these games, because Baines is, you know, one of the linchpins to what they do defensively and the only guy that can be physical in that front court against bigger teams like, you know, like a Milwaukee or like a Philadelphia or any of these other teams in the conference. That, to me, is the toughest conversation, having it with presumably a Jaylen Brown about being a full-time bench player.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've got a lot of issues. I mean, look, Terry Rozier is not going to be thrilled, I imagine, with not playing more than 15 minutes a game if Kyrie's healthy either, right? I mean, that's another guy who's in a contract year. I mean, they got a few guys in contract years. They got a few guys trying to make names for themselves. You know, that doesn't mean that they're like destined to be a disappointment or something. But, you know, it just, again, these are great problems to have. Like, having too much talent in a lot of, you know, essentially what we're saying is their problem. And that's a pretty nice problem, right? I mean, I think there's about 27 teams or so that would be very happy to trade their situation with the Celtics, maybe even more than 27. So, I mean, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, it's a pretty good time to be a Boston Celtic fan. But it just means that there are, you know, this shouldn't be looked at as the coronation that I think a lot of people have at all. Well, now that Gordon Hayward's back, they're going to be just fine. Because you're right, like, they're... whether it is Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, or maybe it is Gordon Hayward. Maybe they say, listen, we want you to really ease yourself back in and, you know, take your time and get yourself right. So we're going to play you 15 minutes a game for a while. You know, maybe that's what they'll do, right? Like, I don't know. But there are a lot of those, things that need to be sorted out before this team gets their situation sorted. And, you know, that could really end up being the thing that determines whether they, you know, whether they're, you know, back and they're in the finals again for the first time in a few years, or, you know, if they do fall a little bit short, say in the second or second round or in the conference finals.
Yeah, I think early on you're going to see guys get their minutes because of rest for certain players and, you know, guys coming back from injuries, but we get to the All-Star break and everybody's kind of going at full speed. Yeah, maybe there could be. And Rozier, look, I thought Terry Rozier said the right things immediately after the season, because he was pressed about next year and he's been a starter and how does he feel about it. He came out and quickly said, this is Kyrie Irving's team. Kyrie Irving is the starting point guard and I'm the backup. And I think that was a really smart play to relieve a lot of the tension. So I'm with you on, you know, Terry wouldn't want to play just 15 minutes per game.
It's also really easy to say that on June 1st. It's another thing to say it on December 1st in a contract year when you're playing 15 minutes a game and averaging 6 points and 2 assists, right?
Yeah.
And that, I'm not trying to say that like Terry Rozier is going to come in and demand minutes and the ball and, you know, be a bad guy or something. But, you know, look, he clearly enjoyed the celebrity he got last year, as anybody would, right? He played great in the playoffs. He's got his whole line of T-shirts. He's got this new nickname. He's the face of Puma. I mean, it really is remarkable the rise he had over the space of what, 2 months basically. But there's now going to be an adjustment period back the other way, assuming he isn't traded, which I also think is a possibility. So, I mean, look, there's a lot of stuff to figure out there, and it's going to be a fun team to watch. I'm excited to watch them both. You know, Brad's obviously a terrific coach, but they do have a lot of questions about how they're going to play. You know, do they start all three of those guys and have Aaron Baines come off the bench? They could do that too. Right. You could play Gordon Hayward a power forward pretty easily. You know, but there's just a lot to sort out. And, you know, there's a lot of teams like that, whether it's San Antonio, Toronto, Boston, you know, Houston's got a lot of changes. I mean, that's one of the things that's going to be fun about this season in the NBA is a lot of the best teams in the league have had really significant changes to them. And, you know, over these first 6 weeks or 2 months of the year, you know, what's going to be really fun to kind of watch these teams on a regular basis and see how these coaches figure out, you know, how they want to deploy their resources, who they want to play, how they want to play them. All that stuff is going to be really fun to watch unfold.
Oh, the Celtics can have a death lineup, you know, that rivals Golden State, because if you can put Horford at five with Tatum, Brown, Hayward, and Kyrie Irving in that lineup, that's going to be as potent, at least as potent, offensive lineup as you're going to get in the Eastern Conference, maybe the entire league. And I'll end with this, Tim. You know, and people, I feel like we do this too often. But once again, in Boston, they're going to be keeping an eye on Anthony Davis and seeing what happens there. We know about the agent change down there. I don't know what that necessarily means. Rumors of Rich Paul. I don't think it's done yet with Rich Paul and Anthony Davis. But, you know, whoever it winds up being.
Wait officially 2 weeks to sign him. And I don't think it's been 2 weeks yet. But I'm pretty sure when the 2 weeks is over, that's what's going to happen. Barring something weird happening.
Maybe, but I've been hearing a couple of things as well that you know, Davis is obviously, I think, still being recruited by other agents at this point.
I'm sure he's been recruited plenty when he's got a potential $250 million contract coming in about 8 months.
Exactly. Either way, if the agent change affects Anthony Davis, the Celtics have long been sitting on this. And, you know, one of the reasons, Tim, that they gave Marcus Smart all that money, they didn't have to. I mean, they could have held out and said, Marcus, here's a qualifying offer. One of the reasons they gave Marcus Smart all that money is that it gives them that mid-level contract that they could potentially use in a Davis trade. So they wouldn't have to deal maybe one of their top-level guys to go get a max-level player like Anthony Davis. So if the Pelicans struggle, I think we both agree they could struggle this year. If they struggle, we'll see what happens down south.
I don't think there's any chance. I'm going to say now. I think there is a 0% chance Anthony Davis is traded this year and under any circumstances. The only caveat I would give to that is if Anthony Davis announces, I need to be traded today. But I do not see him doing that, and I do not see the Pelicans trading him under any circumstances, because they have the ability, as I alluded to offer him a five-year Supermax contract extension next summer for what could be somewhere near $250 million. So my assumption is what they're going to do is play the season out, unless Davis, you know, does something very unlike his personality and say, you know, I need to get out of here immediately, which I just can't see him doing, I guess, if they're 10-40 maybe or something, but I don't think they're going to be that bad. But next summer, you go to him and say, hey, here's this contract. What do you think? If then he says, nah, you know, then you're in a situation like what happened with the Spurs with Kawhi Leonard, right, where the Spurs didn't really want to give that Supermax deal. And so they traded him. And that, if you go back and look over the last few years, look at the guys who've been traded. Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, Kawhi Leonard. What did they all have in common? They were all guys that had the ability to get the Supermax, and their team did not want to give it to them. And so they traded him. No one yet, there have been two guys, I guess three if you count Russell Westbrook, who've been offered the Supermax. They've all taken it. You know, Westbrook, John Wall, James Harden. So my guess is, unless the Pelicans are absolutely horrendous, they get through this year, Anthony Davis agrees to the Supermax, and then at some point down the road, if he's not happy there, he gets traded. But I think the pivot point for this is next July 1st, not February's trade deadline, because I just can't see – you don't get a chance to have a guy like Anthony Davis on your team very often, and they are going to have cap space next summer to go sign another player to play with them. They're going to have close to a max slot. I just can't see the Pelicans bailing on having him on their team unless, you know, maybe if the Celtics came in and said, we'll give you Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and something, like some crazy offer, maybe then they would do it. But I think it would have to be an obscene price for them to trade him before getting the chance to lock him up for the rest of his prime.
Yeah, I agree with that part. I mean, if Anthony Davis gets traded down the line, it's going to be a Herschel Walker type of deal. It's going to be the biggest haul that a team gets back because of Davis's, you know, his play, his age, you know, his potential contract situation. It's all in favor of that. Tim, always appreciate you joining me here on the podcast. Great stuff as usual. And I look forward to your first trip to Boston to see that finals matchup between the Celtics and the Golden State Warriors?
I mean, listen, it would be pretty fun if it happened. I mean, like you said, those two death lineups going head to head would be fun. So if it does, I'll be expecting you to show me around. So we'll see what happens.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Tim, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Anytime, man. I'll see you soon.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Tim Bontemps for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.